case for argument, United States v. Fleming. Mr. Kaufman.
Morning, Your Honors. Greg Kaufman for Mr. Fleming, the appellant. There's a sole issue in this case, Your Honors, and that's whether or not the court abused its discretion, the district court abused its discretion in admitting evidence under 404B of prior bad acts. The government was asked upon my objection at trial what their intent was to in use of these witnesses, and I think the court put it correctly in that it was going to be a cumulative effect and he was not going to allow that, or we would readdress it at a later date when we got to that point. The government went ahead and had one witness testify before I voiced an objection to the 404B evidence, and then four others were called. Ms. Aiken, Gershoffer, and two gentlemen named Herring and Lucas testified. I think from their testimony, the government was using their evidence for the purpose of a character. Careful how I phrase this. I don't want to use the word I'm thinking of, but I think a blemish on Mr. Fleming's character was the sole purpose. I don't believe that based on the indictment and based on the evidence needed, that they needed to go down that road. And when allowed to go down that road, I think it was an abuse of discretion on the court's part that all this 404B evidence was admitted. At that point in time, Mr. Fleming, yes, had been convicted of two prior possessions of cocaine. And at that point in time, the government charged him with seven counts. One through six were dealing with the drugs and the trafficking of those drugs. Four of those counts were hand-to-hand controlled buys by folks working for the United States government as an undercover. And so I don't think they needed to submit or to proffer this additional evidence. I think that in and of itself was the unfair prejudice. And allowing that to come in, I believe the district court committed error and abused its discretion. There was sufficient evidence, I think, outside of these four witnesses that testified after the objection and even the one prior to my objection that they should not have been allowed to testify about those events. The government in their brief addressed it, I think, adequately in saying that it would have been confusingly incomplete. And I think it's not the government's burden to tell a story. It's the government's burden to prove their case. And I think what the government wanted to do and did, and in violation of 404B, was tell a story. Mr. Herring and Mr. Lucas testified about a lot of things that occurred prior to August of 2007, which was what the indictment was addressing in the seven counts. Ms. Gershoffer and Ms. Aiken did the same thing. And I don't think there was a question of identity. I don't think there was a question of intent when you had these four controlled buys. I think what happened was that the trial got out of hand and became unfair.
Controlled buys were by whom?
They were by other individuals, and I believe their name was Williams or Brown. I can't recall.
Of these four?
That's correct. No, none of these four.
Were completely, yeah.
Yeah, the four controlled buys were two other witnesses that did testify at trial. What you have here, Your Honors, is I think, and why I summed it up in one cited case, was with Beasley. Very similar facts, except for the fact in Beasley you had a chemist, and here you had a felon.
Well, what defenses did Fleming raise at the trial?
I think for the most part, Your Honor, it was he didn't do it. It was that sort of kind of a defense, as simply as put, is that there was not a the control buys weren't really.
Did he argue that he just used this cocaine for personal consumption?
I don't think that that would be a fair and adequate defense due to the amount that had been bought during the controlled buys. It was Mr. Fleming's opinion that he didn't do the controlled buys, that the controlled buys were set up.
The controlled buyers were just lying.
Correct.
He was not the seller.
Correct.
Wasn't there a search of his house also, though?
There was, and there was.
Found a lot of stuff.
There was found marijuana, cash, and a small amount of crack cocaine, or powder cocaine. I can't recall.
Wasn't there some paraphernalia also?
There were some scales, and I believe there were some other items. Yes, and three guns were found in the residence. The witnesses that testified in the subordinates, or I guess the undercover agents that were used, did testify, and there was evidence that they continued to buy after Mr. Fleming's arrest. They had themselves been caught in a controlled substance undercover sting, and that's why they were doing what they were doing, was to try and save their own skin. And that was brought up at trial, and I think that was the gist of Mr. Fleming's defense, was that these people can't be trusted. When you throw in that with the other four or five witnesses testifying about, here's the events that preceded 2007 August, and there was a little bit of Ms. Gershoffer and Ms. Aiken and Ms. Penna that did testify that some things did happen in August. It's the cumulative effect, and it's like the snowball rolling down the hill.
Well, if his defense is that he didn't do it, the court focused on his knowledge and intent. This is with the before and after. That was just evidence. These are the kinds of transactions that were going on. Other than in August, I guess there's the one focus month, wasn't it?
Yes.
Something. Yeah. So, I know that's the umbrella a lot of people try to get under in getting this kind of stuff in. But in this case, since he's denying he did it at all, testimony of others that this is what he did before and after means that maybe he really did do the whole thing.
And it certainly can appear that way, and I think that is exactly why the United States government needed and wanted to use those other witnesses, because they realized that their undercover agents were not as clean as this fresh-driven snow. So, I think they needed these other folks to strengthen their case, but I think when using these other folks and using that 404B evidence, the four-prong test has been enumerated in several opinions in this court. It's the last prong, that whether that evidence, even though probative, was unfairly prejudicial. And I think that's where this fails, and I think that's where the abuse of discretion lies. I don't think that these events, even in the course of a year's time, were outside the scope of the proximity to the indicted offenses, nor do I think they were dissimilar. But I think that that last prong, the probative value they added, was farly outweighed by any unfair prejudice. They were themselves not part of any indictment, these five folks that testified. Mr. Lucas' testimony, I think, was some of the most damning, because he addressed the fact that he and Mr. Fleming drove to Detroit, Michigan. This was, in his words, to buy powdered cocaine and bring it back to Elkhart, Indiana. I think that in and of itself, you could argue it didn't have any probative evidence, because we weren't talking about powder cocaine, we're talking about crack cocaine. And whether or not the government had to prove how Mr. Fleming got it, I don't think was an issue. It was that he had it and distributed it. That's what we were there for at trial. So I think when you throw that in, Mr. Herring's testimony about being a dealer and having been a dealer for a long time, and he had a very boisterous nickname in the community, I don't think any of that led to or helped other than to harm my client's character, and that's the violation of 404B. I think that's what Beasley said, is that in relying on repeated efforts to show character in a bad light, that's where you have this error, and I think that's where the court in the district in South Bend abused its discretion. I don't have any further argument.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kaufman. Mr. Schmidt?
The defendant takes issue with five witnesses who were called. I would submit that three of the five don't even involve 404B. Ms. Jaretta Penn testified without any defense objection, and so we're not talking about abuse of discretion there. We're talking about plain error. And she testified that she bought from the defendant in the summer of 2007 and some times prior. Count one of the indictment charged the defendant with possession of crack cocaine in excess of 50 grams with intent to distribute. In addition, there were four individual crack distribution counts involving the controlled buys that were conducted in August of 2007. But count one was an overarching count, in a sense, involving the possession with intent to distribute. And as defense counsel correctly noted, the defendant put in issue all the essential elements of the crime, including his knowledge and intent, which is a specific element that the government has to prove, specific intent to distribute. And so the government put forward a series of witnesses to help show that intent, not to show character or propensity to commit drug trafficking crimes.
Well, how is intent an issue? I don't understand.
The government had to show, Your Honor, that Kamani Fleming had the specific intent to distribute the crack cocaine that he possessed with the intent to distribute it.
How could there be any doubt? I don't understand.
Well, there was...
With the controlled buys, didn't that show he intended to sell?
That was one part of it, but count one actually charged him with possession with intent to distribute apart from the controlled buys. And as part of that, we had to show an intent to distribute. And by asserting a general...
I don't understand. Why don't the controlled buys show the intent to distribute?
They help too, Your Honor.
Why help? I don't understand. How could he contest the fact that he had the intent?
He did.
He
denied everything.
It's one thing to deny that you were there. It's another thing to say that, well, even if you don't believe me that I didn't make these sales, nevertheless, I didn't intend.
Yeah. By asserting a general defense to every essential element, Your Honor, the defendant put an issue in a specific way.
So what you're saying is, in any drug case, you can present any evidence of prior drug dealing by the defendant. Justice Department does not recognize any limits on drug dealings. What would be an example?
I think there are limits, but what this court has said...
I know. What is the what would be an example of improper use of prior drug dealing evidence?
I think if the government went too far back in
time... That's too vague. It may be precise.
I think if the government went back more than 5 or 10 years in time...
So in other words, any evidence of previous drug dealings by the defendant within 5 years is, in your view, automatically admissible?
No, Your Honor.
So give me an example.
I believe that what properly...
Don't interrupt. Give me an example of a prior drug sale by a defendant within 5 years before the crime in question that you would acknowledge was improper.
Well, I don't have one on the tip of my tongue.
Well, you better give me one, because what I am beginning to see in the Justice Department's cases is that you believe that in drug cases you can always introduce evidence of prior drug deals.
Your Honor, I can't defend all the department's drug cases.
You give me then an example. It doesn't have to be a real case. It can be hypothetical, of what would you regard as an improper use of prior drug dealing evidence within a 5 or 10 year period.
I think if the government put on 10 or 12 witnesses...
Okay, so we're narrowing it nicely. Your position, Justice Department's position, is you can put in 10 witnesses testified of prior drug dealing within the past 10 years. You can't have 12 witnesses within the past 15 years, 20 witnesses within the past 30 years, but 10 witnesses within the past 10 years.
I think it's unfair,
Your
Honor.
Is that the Justice Department's position?
I think it's unfair to paint in such an abstract manner, because I think...
Well, I'm asking you to be concrete. When I ask you to be concrete, you gave me 5 to 10 years, and then you gave me 10 witnesses. That's your idea of concrete.
Those are elements that I think that would go
into... Well, you're
into
being
it.
Extremely vague to me, because what I hear you saying is that it is the Justice Department's view that in a drug case, you can always put in evidence of prior drug dealings by the defendant. There may be some temporal limit, very broad. There may be number of witnesses, very broad. But in every case, you could say put in 3 witnesses of prior drug dealings with the defendant in the last 4 years, right? Is that your rule?
No, Your Honor. I think it's too difficult to paint in such broad strokes. I think this
fine. I keep asking you for a concrete example, and you keep telling me it's improper to paint in with these broad strokes, which is fine. So give me an example of what you conceive to be the significance of 404B in a drug case. Maybe you think it has no significance. It just doesn't belong in a drug case.
Oh, it absolutely applies.
Well, fine. Then give me an example where it applies.
What this court has said.
I'm not interested in what this court has said. I'm interested in your giving me an example of what you would consider to be improper use of prior drug dealing evidence.
I would prefer to give you an example, Your Honor, of
but I want
proper
I have
use,
asked I you I have don't
here.
Interrupt me, please.
I wasn't
don't
finished,
interrupt
but.
Me. I have asked you for an example. Now you can say to me, no, you will not give me an example. That's fine, I accept that.
Well, I've attempted to give you elements, Your Honor. Beyond that, I don't
I
think
asked
I can
ask you for an example.
I don't think I can, Your Honor.
You can't give me an example.
I
infer from that in every drug case you believe you can introduce within some very broad temporal and numerical limits, evidence of prior drug dealing by the defendant.
I don't think that would be a fair inference, but I think what we
sure
have...
It would, because you can't give any example of where it would be improper.
I think what we're down to in this case, Your Honor, is with respect to two witnesses, because three of the witnesses testified to the August
transaction. So let's talk about the two witnesses.
Happily. Michael Herring testified that he purchased, beginning in May of 2006 and continuing through 2007, except not in August of 2007 because he was arrested during that period and in custody. He testified that he purchased up to an ounce at a time. He observed the defendant in possession of a handgun, and he saw the fortified door, including at the very location where the drug dealing was going on at 9th and Franklin Streets in August of 2007, and where the search warrant was executed on August 23rd, 2007. His testimony went to the issue, as the district court acknowledged and as the government argued below, went to the issue of the defendant's intent and knowledge. And this court has said
knowledge
that
of what?
His knowledge of what the cocaine was for, how it was to be used,
well,
and how
it was
to
what
be distributed.
It was for?
His intent, really.
Intent to do what?
Intent to distribute the
cocaine. Well, that's
cocaine.
Not in doubt, right?
I'm sorry?
Is there some argument that he just intended to consume it himself?
Yes, by putting in a general denial, we have to prove, as you know, Your Honor, beyond a reasonable doubt, the specific intent element. And this court has said that prior drug transactions...
You had evidence with your controlled buys, right?
This court has said that prior drug...
You had evidence with... Weren't the controlled buys your best evidence? No?
Not necessarily. I think the government is entitled not
well,
just
why,
to present...
Why wasn't it, what was the imperfection in that evidence?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What was the imperfection in controlled buys evidence?
Anytime there are controlled buys using persons that have a criminal history and are themselves under suspicion, and in this case...
Herring was not?
The persons who did the
controlled... Herring was not?
He was not working for the government as a
Herring
confidential
was not
informant.
Under didn't have a criminal record or anything.
He was an admitted crack user and admitted crack dealer.
Do you have a criminal record?
I don't recall off the top of my head, Your Honor.
And what about the other person?
Jason Lucas, I think, was a particularly critical witness because on the intent issue, because he showed that there could be no doubt that the defendant possessed cocaine with intent to distribute it because of the way he operated. And what he did was he traveled to Detroit to pick up cocaine powder with Jason Lucas, and they brought the cocaine powder back to 9th and Franklin Streets, where Mr. Lucas observed Kamani Fleming, the defendant, cook up the cocaine powder into crack cocaine using the microwave at the 9th and Franklin Street address. And he also testified that he himself helped to distribute cocaine, crack cocaine, with Kamani Fleming. But he did this in a period up to April of 2007 because he, too, was arrested locally
so
in April of 2007.
Why didn't you charge the defendant with drug dealing in April?
We could have. At some point... in order to come up with a more concise indictment, there were seven counts of the indictment.
It's very strange because you charge you charge the person with a subset of his crimes, and then you use what now you describe as a vital witness to testify to his other crimes which weren't charged. So then you get into 404B, and it becomes other crimes evidence.
But
it's
odd. But having one witness for a set of events isn't the same as proving beyond a reasonable doubt. And at that point, charging everything...
Well, that's, of course, the purpose of 404B, right? That you're not supposed to besmirch the person by presenting evidence of other crimes, which you're not prepared to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, but you're happy to have someone say, yeah, he committed those crimes.
The purpose here was not to besmirch the character of the defendant.
You said it. You want to provide evidence that the defendant was selling drugs in April, but you don't want to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
But
you just want to put in some evidence so a jury will say, yeah, right.
But we want to do that simply to show his intent to distribute.
No, not simply to show. It's so.
Well, that's what the district court held, and that's what the government asserted below.
Really?
And it was evidence that was similar in time, the same type, so it meets the second prong of the four-prong test. It was sufficiently proved because there are witnesses with personal knowledge, and the probative value was not substantially outweighed by the risk of unfair prejudice here for a couple of different reasons. One was the fact that the district court gave limiting instructions after the two 404B
limited
witnesses.
Instruction, honestly.
And in the final instructions. And there's another key reason why.
I seriously believe that a limited instruction about a person's criminality is going to have an effect on a jury.
Well, this court has held that jurors are presumed to follow the court's instructions. I do indeed.
You're an experienced lawyer, you know.
I am. I've done this a lot of years, and I do see jurors following in the instructions.
It can be effective. Not when you tell a person, well, you've heard this guy committed other crimes, but you're only permitted to consider that on issues of intent. No.
There's a second key reason why I think there is little risk of unfair prejudice. Because the defendant did not and would not stipulate to his prior felony conviction, count 7 charged felon in possession of a firearm, the government was forced to prove his prior felony convictions with paperwork and documentation. And all of those prior felony convictions involved drug trafficking crimes. So the jury already knew properly, as an element of proof in the felon in possession case, that the defendant was a prior drug trafficker, a convicted one, in 2002, in 2004, and in 1997 in Michigan. So the risk of any...
Right, you have an overwhelming case, so what you do is you throw in the other crimes evidence to make it more overwhelming, knowing that, assuming he's convicted, you always have harmless error to fall back on.
In fact, Your Honor, the government eliminated additional proof that it had, witnesses that it had ready to testify in response to the district court's expressed concern about a cumulative effect. And there were 3 or 4 additional witnesses that we were prepared to call that we did not call and decided not to call in order to eliminate that concern over a cumulative effect. Remember, we're talking about a cumulative effect only from 2 witnesses and government proof that really lasted a little more than a single trial day for the entire case that was put on. So we didn't have undue time consumption, we had little unfair risk of unfair prejudice, and we really had only 2 404B witnesses. Thank you.
You didn't reach your quota of 10.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Kaufman, do you have anything further? Well, you have more time. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we thank you for accepting the appointment and your efforts on behalf of your client. We